Today on the AV Podcast, we break down the first half of the Raptors season with our 2018 State of the Raptors address. I invite friends of the podcast, Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, and the head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU program, Randall Walter, as we discuss if Masai Ujiri should be Executive of the Year. We discuss DeMar, Kyle, Jonas, Serge, and the value of the bench mob. What's up with Norman Powell? How far the Raptors can go this season, and if now's the time and the season for the Raptors to make it to, dare I say it, the NBA Finals. Whew. This podcast was originally recorded on Valentine's Day, which will make more sense the more you listen to it. To listen to more podcast shows from South Shore Ave, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. And South Shore Ave is also available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can catch all of the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. So go ahead and subscribe while you're listening right now, all right? You can multitask. I have faith in your multitasking abilities. I believe in you. I do. It's the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. We, the North, DJ Khaled voice.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast. My guest today are not only diehard Raptors watchers, but both of them are my guests on the NBA preview podcast of each conference that was launched at the start of the NBA season. One of them is a commissioner of 22 fantasy leagues across four major sports, and apparently he's fighting the Ebola virus. I'll let him tell it. And he's also a friend of the podcast. The other is the head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU program in Brampton, and for now, he's still currently holding the title of the CEO of Team Lightskin. Jesse Williams, Michael Ealy, Shamar Moore, y'all best watch your back. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, please welcome back Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, and Randall Walter. What's going on, fellas?
Yes, sir. Everything's good. Everything's good. Hey, but you forgot to mention right now, currently in first place of my league. Actually, it's not even of my league, so there's no like collusion. First place in a league that you're in. Don't forget to mention that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens next month, buddy.
He took over just a couple of days ago, and he's going.
A couple of weeks.
Someone's been taking track.
I know you're sticking your bowler chest out very, very loudly and proudly right now.
Yeah. You know what? Because I lost cousins, and my team is still rolling, and I'm in first. So I'm like, that tells you what kind of a not commish, but what kind of a manager I am.
I'm a perennial, and I used to say this to Heavy all the time. He used to get all mad and didn't want to challenge me to play real ball, but I'm a perennial fantasy finalist. It doesn't matter what it is.
And I would admit to that, because I know, like, usually it's me and you down, like, the final couple of weeks or the playoffs or whatnot. Actually, I think you're in second right now.
Yeah, true, except last year I was the one in the finals, but go on.
But hold on, true, say who's the one who won the finals last year?
Yeah, hey, I didn't say you didn't. I'm just trying to correct Julian here.
Sure, you won it last year, okay.
I'm just trying to correct Julian here. Let's move on to something a little more important before we get to the Raptors. Listen, man, shout out to Joe Ward, man. I know he went through just a hard injury, man. The he separated his shoulder. That's what he did, right?
Yeah, he had a partial separation. Mm. Should be back by the end of the month.
Okay, good. Weeks. Good, because that looked, well, hopefully, I mean, that's good. That's good that he didn't lose too much time, because that injury looked, I mean, that, it made me sit up on my chair when I saw that, because I thought it was his head first, actually.
He's lucky, because it could have been worse.
Oh, yeah.
We thought it was like, it could have been his collarbone broken or something, but it was just a partial. They did x-rays and all that, so he should be good in a couple of weeks.
And no and no penalty either.
No, yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Good though.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Shout out to him, man. Just a speedy recovery. You'll be back on the ice and hopefully we're drinking, what is it, English Harbor and and Johnny Walker out in the cup. That's what we gonna do.
English Harbor.
Yeah, oh, Lord. Yeah, yeah. I know. I ignored Mount Gay. I did that on purpose. That's what I did. All right. So this episode is the second annual State of the Raptors address, where we break down and discuss the first half and, you know, some other games of the Raptors season. If by chance you didn't get to listen to last year's episode of the Raptors State of the Address, which you can find under the South Shore Ave radio tab, the terms hashtag club etiquette and hashtag minus one were born. Anyone who listens to that knows what I'm talking about. So Raptors right now, they're currently first in the Eastern Conference. They're 40-16 as of this recording. I know they're playing Chicago right now. So, you know, give or take, they could be 41-16 or 40-17. They're also the third best team in the NBA as of this recording. They've improved in a lot of areas from last season. Most importantly, they're top 10 in pace. They're 11th in the assist overall in the league. They reduced their turnovers to fourth in the NBA. And last but not least, they're fourth in the NBA in offensive and defensive ratings.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Julian, this sounds so good to hear that, man. We've waited how many years? Mm. I've went on rants complaining in the Colangelo days of just make a move that would work. And you want to know something? What's so interesting? If you really want to break it down, I mean, I give total respect to MU, Masai. I think mm-hmm. he's a genius. But there are still remnants, and you do see some of Colangelo's fingerprints still on this team and the trend that it went.
Man, don't bring Colangelo's name. Is this wrong with you?
Yeah, you know what I'm telling you, man. Listen, the one thing that I'll give Colangelo, right, when he was with the Raptors and if he ever was slamming him, I never faulted Colangelo for trying to make big moves to make to turn the ship around. And really and honestly, sometimes it just takes a little luck. And MU had a little luck and a little smart, and he's never made any, except for last trade deadline when he made some big splash free agent, not free agent, but trades. I think this time around, you know what, he did a good thing at sticking with his guns.
Yeah,
you know, he it's a great balance of what he did. And I'll be the first to say, as much as I'm a big Raptor fan, and you know, shout out to my man Kevin, you do and you will be owing me money at the end of the season, because I did believe the Raps would be good this year, but not this good.
And on top of that, they're also sending DeMar DeRozan and Lowry back to the All-Star game for a third and fourth straight year. How Siakam, Poeltl, or even Van Fleet didn't make the rookie game roster after they've been dominating the second units all season is beyond me. But the expectations for this team was for them just to be a playoff contender, even though I personally had them finishing third at the time in the Eastern Conference preview, right behind Cleveland and Boston. But so far, they've smashed anyone's expectations for them this season. They've finished up all their West Coast trips. The toughest part of the schedule is come and gone. The last 25 games are almost all against the Eastern Conference teams. They got about 5 games left versus the West, all of them at home. And the rest of the season is looking brighter and brighter than ever before. So with that said, I'll ask, and I can start with you, Julian. What's your favorite thing of the Raptors during the first half of the season? Like, what's your favorite? What do you think of the Raptors this first half of the season? What's your favorite moment or thing that comes up?
The bench mobs. It's simple. Anybody who's been watching, you know, it's like what has got them to where they are right now is the bench. There's like many, like I think it was like I remember there was like a stretch of games where the starters were like in that third quarter would be like giving up slack or allowing the other team to get back in it, and then you could bring in the bench. The bench would either, you know, either cut down the deficit or even take back the lead, like over and over and over. And any time where you can go to your bench to hold a lead, to bring your team back in it, or even to take a lead, it's a sign of a of a great team. So in that first half, it's the bench. Van Vliet, like, who would have thought losing Corey Joseph that you would have Van Vliet step up even further than a Corey? I think he's a better player than Corey at this point. I mean, not a better player, but what he's able to contribute to the Raptors is much more than what Corey did, which nobody seen that coming.
Yeah, he's
been... Siakam.
Siakam
as well. Even Poeltl. Like, honestly, when we drafted Poeltl, I thought he was slow-footed, not very athletic. But he has great hands. He's moving. That whole bench has to be the highlight of the entire first half. Has to be.
And what about you, Randall?
I mean, he took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, you can't – no one could have foresaw what was going to happen. You know, I think the organization did, because they made a bunch of moves knowing in the background that this team – the second unit was ready to take, was poised to take that next step. And I'll take, I think that's all attributed to that 905. I mean, look, they won, you know, a championship mm-hmm. with that unit. So the proof's in the pudding, right? They just believed in it, the system, and they followed through. I mean, the interesting thing about the second unit, and I was talking about this with some other people the other day, is that you have two contrasting styles. The first unit's more methodical. Even though the ball's moving a lot better this year, you got two kind of ISO players who could score essentially at will. You know, you got Ibaka, who I think is fit into his role very well. Not as reminiscent as he was at OKC, but he's falling into that kind of that role he had with them when Westbrook and KD was on the team, right?
Right.
You know, I think Valanciunas of late has come alive, and the young Rook OG playing really well. Mm. But if you look at the second unit, their style is just totally different. So you're throwing two teams at other teams every night. You got their defense is really, really good. They move really well, help defenses there. You know, in the NBA, believe it or not, they box out. They play a lot of pressure. I've seen Coach Casey throwing full court pressure on them, mm-hmm. on other teams with them on. And they run transition extremely well with the bigs, right? Sackham's running the floor extremely well. You got DeLon, a two guard front, so they can push the ball. Anyone from the one to maybe the five can run the floor with the ball, mm-hmm. and then you even got some shooting on that unit with Van Vliet and
CJ Miles. Yeah.
So, like, if you really look at it, like, a lot of times at the trade deadline, I'm thinking we need this, we need that. I honestly, the first time in I can't even name it in Raptors history, I was sitting back and I'm like, I don't think they need to make a move. Just not now. The only move I can think of is just a little more presence inside on the defensive end. Mm. Even that, you know, Valanciunas has stepped up. So, you know, I'm impressed overall with the team this first half.
Yeah, I think. Well,
and hold on, Calvin. Hold on before you go. I am impressed with Coach Casey. Done. Said it. It's out there. It's out there. The World Wide Web has heard me say it. I am impressed with Coach Casey's game adjustments. You heard it. Live and direct for the first half of the season.
You put it out in the universe.
I would hope he would been able to improve his coaching game. You know, just like a player like you who's played in the league for years and years.
Yeah, coaches
would
improve too.
That as a coach, you know, he's learning too, right?
Yeah, coaches
and
improve.
At this point, he has vastly improved.
Yeah,
I don't think game decisions and whatnot.
Yeah. I don't think anybody could deny that. To me, it's funny. I think. Well, obviously the bench mob, and I'll get to them in a second. But like, I think the fact that they're just overall the way that they're sharing the ball is the biggest thing to me. Like I've said in the past that when I've said this in previous podcasts that when Lowry and DeRozan are moving the ball and they're getting teammates involved and the ball's whipping around back and forth from one side of the other, moving the defense, they're a dangerous team. And I think, you know, after the way they flamed out in the playoffs, I think Masai finally put his foot down about how the culture of this team and the flow, the way that they play offense, needs to be run. And I think the team is finally adhering to this style, which I think is probably the biggest thing, because it didn't seem like the team was listening to that beforehand, whether the players were either had an epiphany or they completely bought in this summer. But because of that change, I feel like now they're one of the most efficient teams in the NBA. One of the most efficient offensive teams, especially the NBA. And it's attributed to Masai laying down the law finally. You know what I mean? And saying, listen, I want this culture to be like this. This has to change. We cannot go the same way. You know what they say? The definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. That's basically what the Raptors were doing the last few years. And it's like, okay, you know what? We need to change it up. And also, you know, part of that is some of the moves they made, as Randall alluded to, with regards to the bench. You know, I've been saying all season, basically, and almost every basketball podcast that we've had on the show since the season started, how much I love the bench. They've been amazing. I mean, what can you say about all those guys? I mean, from Wright, Van Vliet, Poto, Siakam, like every one of their game individuals has jumped a level. You know what I mean? And I think CJ Miles has been a quality signing. Getting Anunoby, even in the chat that we're in, I still remember I was the one that was hyping up that draft pick. Like when people were like, man, who's this kid? I was like, yo, this is a steal. Because I remember watching him at Indiana, especially his freshman year, and he was a beast, especially defensively. He was an athletic beast that had an offensive game to go with it. So I was like, yo, if this guy can recover from, you know, that knee injury, you know, it's a steal. You know what I mean? It's a chance we're taking, especially in the you know, like that guy would have been a lottery pick last year had he not hurt his knee. The fact that we can get him at that low, what was he picked? 23rd overall?
24th
or somewhere around there. But either way, I'm like, but this is something I've been saying all year. Like this, that was like a steal. And listen, like I think 2 years ago, the bench was amazing, and guys like Corey Joe were a godsend. But I actually enjoy watching this bench even more just for the fact they've been just incredibly efficient. Their intensity on both ends of the floor has been high. They rapidly change the energy of the game. And most importantly, they're under contract for at least another couple of seasons, and they're not hurting the team financially. So you don't have to worry about any up-and-coming contracts and breaking up this bench. So I think that's like one of the biggest things I love about it. It's cost-effective. Seriously. All these guys are like the main parts of the bench are all in their rookie or their second year of their contract. You don't have to worry about these guys until 2020. So that's like the biggest thing about that. And that's why I was like opposed to them making any deals on the trade deadline, because I'm like, why would you poach? Like I heard teams basically saying that they're trying to go after, you know, inquiring to Masai about some of the guys on the bench. And I'm like, if, you know, Masai's a smart guy, he's not going to get rid of any of these guys. They're the best bench in the NBA, and they're basically rookies and second-year guys. You don't have to pay any of these guys really anything major. You don't have to pay $10, $15 million to any of these guys on the floor. So why would you break this up? So to me, like, that's been, like, the biggest thing. You know, those two biggest things. The fact that they're moving the ball around, and the fact that obviously the bench has contributed the way that they have. The bench really is like the MVP of the Raptors this season. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add?
You said it all, man.
You said it all.
We all agreed, right? We all said the same thing, the bench.
We saw this stat yesterday that I don't know if you guys saw in one of our chats, but how they got 11 players averaging over 6 points a game. It's never happened before in NBA history, which is... I mean, I didn't even think it was to that effect. Like that's crazy.
It's unbelievable how everybody has a role. Everybody's happy. Superstars are making the all-star teams. The guys on the bench are developing, contributing, learning. It's just, you know, I think a lot of it too is luck though, Ryan. I think you're right, man. A lot of it is luck because, you know, we're giving these kids a lot of time, and usually they need, you know, kids that are in their first, second, even third year in the league. They need more. They're not ready yet, but they still need that time to learn and grow. And these kids seem to be almost ready. I'm not saying that they're ready for starting minutes, but they seem ready for the opportunity. And it's fortunate, again, even OG and Van Vliet, like, again, these guys weren't – well, Van Vliet wasn't drafted. But these guys, a lot of these guys were not expected to be, you know, have this amount of weight on their shoulders and play and contribute. So I think a lot of it is – I won't say luck because we did draft, but – fortunate, very fortunate.
As Randall like attested to, like just the fact that you had the 905 squad developing on, you know, during the season, but I think even in the off season, like these guys, if you follow some of these guys are around each other all the time. Like even in the summertime, mm-hmm. when the Raptors are in summer league, these guys are there with the summer league guys training and cheering them on. And so it's like a real fat family atmosphere. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
the team.
Yeah. And chemistry is such, to me, chemistry is the most important thing in sports. And me and Julian, we've talked about this in the past all the time.
Like all the time I do.
Like
all
I don't care what kind of talent you can bring in. If it doesn't, if it's a divisive personality, it can completely destroy what you got going. And it's funny because I remember Jason Kidd when he was on the Nets, and I think he had an opportunity to be a free agent. This is right after they lost to the Spurs in the NBA Finals. And he was a free agent, and the Spurs were one of the teams that was looking to get him. And they said the Spurs basically backed off because obviously they saw something in Tony Parker, even though he was struggling his first couple of years. But, you know, Popovich kind of saw through all those obstacles and saw that this guy really has a future to be a really good point guard. But then some of it, too, was some of the baggage that Jason Kidd had. And can you imagine that personality with the stuff that was going on with him and his wife and all that stuff coming in the Spurs locker room? You know what I mean? Like, would it have been the same? I don't know. You know, we'll never know. But, like, again, like, just the kind of continuity that they had for all this time. Like they, you know, decided to keep the talent that they had in-house and, you know, look like 16 years later, this guy's a Hall of Famer. You know, so.
But
so
I think that's like any sport, right? When you have that continuity, you get that cohesiveness going. You know, like you guys said earlier, that's sports, right? I think them trusting in Casey, even though he struggled a couple seasons, you know, they trusted in him to lead the ship. They didn't just do it again, another knee jerk reaction. Masai said, look, we're gonna ride this and we're gonna try to create some type of culture and some type of network, and they did. They kept their two stars. Again, you know, they could have got rid of Larry. I didn't think that was a great sign, even though I love Larry. I didn't think it was a great sign for the organization at the time. But if you're looking at it right now, you know, this is a hard team to crack.
Yeah.
It's just they know how to play together, and the young guys are developing, you know, well with each other as well. I was the X factor of this whole season to me was JV. That was the X factor from the beginning of the season. I said, and the one thing that everyone's on JV about, the one thing I do know is that maybe in the regular season, it's not that, you know, everybody wants that flashy big that can, you know, run up and down the floor, that can stretch offenses, can grab boards like a quasi, Brow or Boogie or even to a certain degree Kevin Love. But at the end of the day, you need a big bruiser when it comes down to a 7-game series. And we saw that when JV, was it 2 years ago when JV was coming in form in the playoffs and he was banging in that paint? You need that big body in there.
And that's one thing. In the playoffs, he plays nice. He's definitely needed. That's why I'm like, I'm always hesitant to get rid of him because I'm like, in the playoffs, you're going to need it when the game slows down. Because it does slow down somewhat, even though it's the new NBA and everything is a fast pace. But it does slow down, and you need guys like him. And to his credit, even from the first time they made the playoffs against Brooklyn, like this guy's he plays well.
Yeah, he does. He does. He does well in the playoffs, but the regular, like, come on. We all thought that JV was, you know, the game was leaving JV behind. Like, he was, he wasn't rebounding like how he should have been as a big man.
No.
He was pump faking. Like, he just wasn't where we thought he would be at this stage of his career. And I was the first to say, you know, and then we were over, like, his salary, is respectable, meaning to what he's offering on the floor.
Yeah.
But they were running into salary cap issues and whatnot, and I was saying the first person that has to go is JV. He has to go because the way that most big men, like, well, most fives now are like, you know, 6'9" or 6'10" and up and down the court, I thought he had to go for sure. And honestly, I'll be the first to say at the trade deadline, I was saying, I love how he's playing and everything, but I go, this is his peak. I think this is his peak right now. You know, he might be able to shoot a little bit better from the outside, but I thought, you know, if we trade him for like a guy like Jordan on the Clippers, or bring in, you know, even a first round pick in the future, like, or whatever, well, no, not just a first round pick, but somebody that can help out up front, I was going to be the first to do it, 100%. Although I love him, and he's one of the main reasons. He's one of the, if I had to choose a number two highlight of the first half, it would have been JV. Mm-hmm. But I also thought at the same time, he's an asset right now, and his asset may not become any more valuable than what he is right now. And I just thought we should use that and trade him. Honestly,
I don't. But the only problem with that is I just don't. Like, everybody was talking about DeAndre Jordan, and I don't know if he would have got us that many more wins.
It's not about wins. It's, to me, it was all about matchups in the playoffs. And I know, before you say anything, like, I know the big man, he can't shoot free throws. They can foul him at the end of the game. My main thing was just rim protection. We don't need any more scorers. I thought the main thing was intimidation in the paint, screens, blocks, cheap, grimy buckets in the playoffs. Just picking up rebounds, putting it back down. That's all I wanted. Fourth quarter comes around, I was all for taking him out in the last few minutes, putting Ibaka at the five and putting Siakam at the four, or whatever. Do whatever. But I just thought, like, the guys like LeBron or guys that are just slashing through the hole, it wouldn't be that easy. And that would have been that defining moment. It wasn't about points and him scoring. That was my whole thing.
Yeah, okay. I guess it would. The other thing too is, do you sign a player like that just to borrow him and break
That's
up that
thing.
Continuity, because he wouldn't re-sign with the Raps? I don't see that.
And to be honest, from an organization standpoint, that's what they would have wanted too. Like, Toronto wouldn't have wanted Jordan to re-sign. I'm assuming that if he had a player option, he wasn't going to take that player option. He would have taken the most money on the market, obviously.
Yeah, the
so
market's
more than
right
likely
right now.
Would have left, but he wouldn't have signed back, and that would have been fine, because I think, I don't know, I'm not a capologist and whatnot, but as I said, going into next year, I think we're like, right now, I know for sure we're right at the cap. We're just below the cap.
Mm-hmm. Just below,
to pay no luxury or whatnot. But next year, the raises come in. Like, Powell's, I think, contract comes in.
Right.
And I think it's like $10 million. And they're going to be over the cap. So they got to let somebody go. Now, Powell, I don't know if we're going to take some time to talk about Powell.
We will. I have a section for him here.
But we'll talk about it later. But somebody has to go next year. Somebody has to go next year. Hey, that
Yeah.
So that's why I said, we let Val go now. We get something for him now at his peak. It's going to ruin our playoff run, but I wouldn't have been mad either or if they had traded Val for somebody, but or if they had kept him like what we did. So I'm happy either or. I'm just saying, we got to do something come the off season. But I guess at this point, we're playing so well, we can worry about that later.
I miss Bruno.
I do too.
He's another guy. We're going to talk about culture and continuity. It didn't work for him.
They tried though. Did anybody see that Twitter? I forget the guy's name, man. But they were playing some song and he was crying. He was basically like, yo, Bruno, like, I'm going to miss you, Bruno.
Well, you know? A fan was?
Oh, my. Sorry, who was it again?
I don't know. I'm asking who. I don't know.
I can't remember the guy's name. I can't remember the guy's name right now. But that was one of the funniest videos I saw, man. He's like, yo, I miss you, Bruno. He's like, yo, to the next time we hit Dundas Street, guy. Dundas Square. That was classic. That was classic. But going back to DeAndre Jordan for a quick second, I'm with Randall. I didn't want him to come here, because even though he's shooting his career best, it's still 58%. You know, I don't know how much that's gonna help going forward in the playoffs. Like, you definitely wouldn't be able to play him in the fourth quarter.
Not
how much is he making? Like 20?
No,
I know that.
Scoring.
I know that. But what I'm saying is that for $24 million or whatever he's being paid this year, which is he's at least $5 to $8 million more than what Jonas is worth right now. And when you're spending that much money on a guy that you can't play, like, from the 6 minute mark into the fourth, like, I find it useless at that point. I'd rather just keep Jonas.
Money is not an issue if you're bringing in a guy for a rental for the last, like, you know, 20 games.
Yeah,
for the organization or whoever. You're just bringing him in to be that role player or whoever you bring in.
Like, listen, I'm not opposed to them moving Jonas at this point. Like, I think that's the only contract you could probably move his in, you know, when we get to Powell in a second. But, you know, but I kind of want, like, the same level of production at the very least. Because, I mean, at least with Jonas this year, he is stretching the floor, shooting, like, he shoots a couple threes a game now. It seems like he's making them. So, you know, it's another element that he's adding as well that because DeAndre Jordan, he's really just, other than alley-oops and garbage points, like, he does not offer anything on the offensive side of the floor at all. Like, he offers nothing. And, I mean, defensively, I know people think he's like this, like...
You're signed for defensively?
Sorry? Yeah, because I think defensively, like, I know people rate him. I don't know. For me, I don't think he's like the greatest defender.
He's a rim protector, but the problem with him, too, is that he's not really a good, like, screen and roll defender, though. But he's good on weak side help, and he's good at clogging the paint, and he's good at,
yeah,
you know,
rebounding. But yeah, he's a weak side blocker. That's what I was looking for. Like, he's a weak side blocker. Yeah. Like, he's a weak side defender, but, like, his own man, not so much.
No. You know? But the one thing that the one player that I thought was an intriguing piece, even though he's a little bit older, was Marc Gasol. I thought that if there was one player that, if possible, I mean, I don't know what we'd be able to get for him if it was, you know, Powell.
Jonas, yeah,
and a draft pick. I would have went for it. I don't know if that would ever been possible. I know that the Grizzlies want to hold on to him for dear life, but I thought if there was anything, I would go for that, because I just thought that he was a ready now player. He's a very witty on defense. Like, he knows
he's
how
a very
to
good
use
defender.
His body.
He's a very good defender.
He's a good man defender. He's not a quote unquote rim protector, but he's a big body that stops, knows how to use his body from players getting deep into the, you know, and he's still a footer, so, you know, there's always a chance for him blocking a shot. So I just thought he was a good fit, smart, good player. But I heard he had some locker room problems, though. Someone told me that. I don't know where I heard that. Yeah. That Mark's not the easiest person to play with. I heard that, and I can't remember who told me that.
That's interesting.
And it was a credible source. It was a credible source. It wasn't like so that he questions a lot of what the coaches say. So, like, he's just in a very analytical person. And if he doesn't like what's going on, he's not going to do it. He's going to, like, kind of revolt, kind of thing. I heard that from a credible source, but I don't remember what context. It was more along the lines of when what's his name got fired from the Grizzlies. It all kind of came out.
Yeah.
Fizdale, yeah. But I know that someone said, yeah, he's not an easy person. It had to be, it might have even been someone that played in the league that told me that. But I can't.
Yeah, but getting Mark would have been a no brainer.
No, yeah, of course. Like I would have did that. That would have did that no problem.
Oh, yeah, no brainer. Like that's no doubt. Okay, he's, everything that you said, he brings everything on both ends of the floor. He had another year remaining on his contract, so he would have been there next year as well. But it would have taken a lot more. It would have taken like JV, DeLon Wright,
and Powell.
First round pick. I heard all of that as rumors. And I guess Toronto wasn't willing to give up DeLon and, you know, in the first and JV.
Yeah, which I don't fault him for, because another summer of these guys improving, and if their value goes up, then, you know, like they'll be worth more. If you have to move them, they'll be valued more. Here's my next question. In your eyes, is Masai Ujiri the executive of the year?
I'm trying to see now. Who else would be in contention?
Daryl Morey would probably be one for picking up Chris Paul and surrounding them with the right kind of role players. Kobe Altman, I mean, recently just did a pretty good job of flipping over that team. Although it was halfway through the year. Cleaning up the mess.
I think Houston. But I think you're right. I'm thinking about it. I don't see any other team. You know, maybe Colangelo. I don't know.
Stop with this Colangelo thing, man.
In the process?
Stop with this Colangelo thing.
Colangelo, man.
I feel like you're wearing a big collar dress shirt right now, just in support of him. Danny Ainge would probably be another one too, because obviously picking up Hayward, you know, trading for Kyrie.
Right. If the Raptors continue on the pace they're going with, I could see. Yeah, Masai deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, continuity has been the mantra of this team for the last few years, and I don't know, keeping the core set of guys, developing the young guys on the squad, as we talked about, making moves when the time is right. which is why, like I said, I was opposed to getting rid of anybody on the bench, as I said before. And it's funny. They're looking like they're starting to like build a team in the Spurs mold a little bit, just finding the right players and the personalities for the system. Like, even though Popovich doesn't have a bunch of studs, he always finds the right players that can thrive in his system, like blending in personality-wise with their other teammates off the floor and developing the young players that they draft. Because with the Spurs, they're always drafting in the low 20s, but yet every year or every couple of years, they find a new guy that comes up, that from the Corey Josephs. Now you're watching DeJounte Murray. You know, like these they always find these guys at the bottom of the first round, second round, and they're always flipping it over to, you know, they're developing that as much as possible. And I feel like in a similar way, Masai's kind of doing the same thing. It's funny, like this team's almost being built like a team from like the 80s and the 90s, meaning not the same style, but just meaning like not a lot of heavy turnover. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're calling it they're comparing this team to the Pistons. I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I just think that this is a really good thing going on. Like they're building from within. I think the 905 has helped the team tremendously again. I think the young players have a chance to bloom. I don't think that the pressure's on the Raptors. I really don't. I think that helps a lot too, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any expectations for the Raptors to win the championship this year. You know, I still don't think, even though I'm a huge Raptor fan and people are jumping on, you know, this bandwagon and winning, I still don't think they're still a shoe-in or to go right to the NBA finals or conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's a shoe-in, really, maybe Cleveland's. But because the East is so bad, right? Like, shoot, I think they said if Toronto were
it's top heavy
playoffs were to end or start today, they'll play Miami, and that wouldn't be no shoot, you know, that wouldn't be no four or five games. That might be six games.
Yeah.
But
because Miami plays hard.
So weak. Yeah, the East is so weak, and I went what Toronto did to Boston that last week or whatnot. Oh my goodness, it just gives that bandwagon fan like myself. thoughts like this is gonna not a breeze, but we're gonna get to the. I'll be disappointed if we didn't get to the conference finals. That's how confident I am. Right now. I'll be disappointed. Is that before trade deadline or after trade deadline?
Well, the trade deadline passed now, right?
Yeah, yeah, but either or, like the way they were playing, like a quarter through, halfway through, and right now, I would have been disappointed if they didn't get to the halfway. Get to the conference finals. Not because I thought Toronto was that dominant, but the East was just, you know, it was just that bad. Listen, when I saw Boston was first for most of the year, and I looked at that roster, and I did not know how they were doing it. Like, they were winning games, and they were winning games in the last minute of every game, like coming back and, you know, and scoring, like, outscoring their opponent by, like, 15-20 in the fourth quarter and winning game after game after game without Hayward. I'm looking at this lineup. I'm like, how are they doing it? Mm-hmm. And then when they played Toronto last week, I think Toronto beat them by, like, 30. And I was like, on paper, and not even on paper, but just visually, Toronto is a better team right now, easily. I'm saying easily the better team than Boston. Now, Cleveland, with the changes they made, like now this is going to be interesting to see how they match up. I don't know how they're going to – I mean, haven't really looked at it yet, but it'll be interesting. But I don't see anybody else in the East beating Toronto in seven games. Beating them at on the road, Toronto visiting on the road, yeah, I can see that. But seven games – maybe Milwaukee still. I can still see Milwaukee beating us maybe in seven, maybe. And then also outside of Cleveland, but nobody else.
You really shortchanging Boston right there, boy.
I think
Boston is that well coached that you can't take them for granted. And the reason I think the reason why they're winning those games is I get it. They've been down a lot of times, but like defensively they've been solid. And they execute really well, man. Like the young guys, especially man, I thought like Jaylen Brown has been a revelation, but man, Tatum has been dope as well, man. Like those guys aren't afraid of the moment from day one. They have not been afraid of the moment, man. So
but as a veteran, like if I'm a team like the Raptors and I'm seeing Tatum and Brown.
Yeah. There's no reason to be nervous.
There's no way I'm letting
them.
These young guys do any stop me or when I want a basket or let them score on me. Like, I just, like, mentally, I'm, like, on another level when I see these guys. That's how I would be if I'm DeMar or Kyle or anybody.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a lot of cerebral, mental, confidence thing,
especially in the playoffs.
No, there's no reason to be afraid of them. That's for sure.
Like, oh, I don't know.
If you're them, like if you're them after being through the playoffs with this same core for the last years,
not even the veterans scare me. Not even the big scare me. Like it just they look. I don't know. They brought in Monroe. They have nobody up front. I'm not even afraid. I'm more afraid of Milwaukee than Boston.
No,
in the playoffs.
No, they don't have any. They don't have any size in the middle. Like
no, none of them. No.
Here's my next question. What do we do about Norman Powell, man?
Oh man,
Randall, you want to jump on this one?
I know that's Julian's boy. I just think that the way the Raptors used to play with the ISO ball, I think that actually fit his style of play a little bit better. He's a dynamic player, so when the shot clock is wearing down. And, you know, he has to make a wild drive to the basket and try to score or try to chuck up a shot. I think that was okay for him. Now that the ball's moving, I just don't know if he's fitting the flow of how this team is playing.
I agree.
You know, and I think that he got so much autonomy on that second unit before and even starting at times with kind of just doing what he can do on an ISO kind of game that he cannot play in this type of style. He's struggling trying to play in this more inclusive style. But if he goes back to just playing D and running the floor like a mini Pascal, I think he was fine because that's what he did when he first got in the league. Just run the floor, play D. You know, if he's open, he sticks the open shot. He's just off. His rhythm is off. His confidence is horrible. But, you know, I still think he's a valuable piece, though.
Oh yeah,
but for $42 million, I think I would look somewhere else.
Especially the way that the bench has, you know, developed and played, it almost increased the pressure on him, and it made him more, I don't know, cautious in his game. Like the bench is playing well, and don't forget he signed the contract. Like I don't know, that can't be coincidental. The week he signed the contract, his game went down south. And I think that played with him. That played with him mentally, because we all know talent wise he's there. Because we've seen it.
Like, yeah.
We know what he's able to do. But he's not doing it. If not all of it, most of it has to do with mentally.
Yeah, you think the pressure?
Like the way it's changed him. It changed his style. And again, with the bench playing so well, we don't have to play him. You know, it's unfortunate for him. Like, if the bench was bad, we'd be still playing him because we have nobody else to play.
Well, the thing about it is he's a three guard stuck in a point guard body, right? You know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, now that OG comes, you got this big, strong defensive presence three who doesn't need to have the ball in his hands. And
younger.
You know, in the starting lineup, he didn't fit because he's too small to play the three. And off the bench now, you got the two guard front. And DeLon is just blossom as well. I mean, we're talking a lot about Van Vliet. He gets a lot of credit, but the length of DeLon and the poise he has as an extra kind of facilitator and a scorer on the second unit, come on.
I see, like, Powell on any other team, I think he would have a chance to be a sixth man or a guy off the bench or whatnot. It's just unfortunate, like, the way Toronto's playing. And with DeMar, like, he could play the two. Right, but you know DeMar's there, that's not going to be many minutes there for him on Toronto. But anywhere else, you know what? You see how Donovan Mitchell's playing for Utah, that's what I thought. That's how I looked at Powell. Yeah. Not as good as Donovan Mitchell. Don't get me wrong. Like, Donovan Mitchell's another. He might be who's the GM in
Utah?
He might be.
Oh man,
he might be up there. I think they won 10 games in a row too.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
But Donovan Mitchell, like I saw, like, you know, he's like a tweener too, right? Like, I don't know how tall is he?
He's like 6'3".
6'3", wow. Right?
Seven foot wingspan.
7 foot. Whoa. Okay. Okay. He's a tweener, but he's not necessarily a tweener if you look at the wingspan. Yeah. Okay. But my whole point was that, like, that's how I saw Powell. Like, he'll just find his role on the floor. Like, he didn't have a position, but he's a guy that can put the ball on the floor. He didn't really have a jump shot in the first, you know, in his first year, but he was developing, and you could see him developing. So,
And he was a second-round pick. So I just thought, like, you know what? This guy would have been a great player off the bench, considering it's Toronto. You know, we're not going to sign many free agents. I thought he was going to keep on developing, and he just hit a wall. And I don't know. Like, hopefully he'll come back in the off next year, and he'll work on some things in the offseason and be the player that he is or was. But right now, he doesn't even get – I don't think he's not even in the rotation. That's a sad thing. And Van Vliet has passed him on the – well, we know that from watching the games. But Van Vliet is playing all the minutes that, you know, that we thought that Powell would be.
Yeah.
You know, I thought Van Vliet would just be a backup, a third-string point guard behind Wright and Lowry.
That's what the expectation was, but he's played so well. Yeah. Like, he's basically – I mean, he's finishing games most of the time.
Finishing games, and he's not the sixth man, I guess Miles is, but he's literally almost, I guess you could say, our sixth man.
Well, again, I feel like he's kind of taking Corey Joe's role, just in the sense where Corey Joe used to finish a lot of games.
Yeah.
And he's basically taking that role now. He's played that well. It's funny. I kind of feel for Norman a little bit, man, just because this guy was.
Everyone does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, because this guy has never been. I don't think he's ever been the apple of Casey's eye. Anytime his game slips a little bit, he's always in the doghouse. You know what I mean? Like, it's as much as he develops and he shows promise, there's been times where you're like, Jesus Christ, can you play Powell? Like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's been many times in the last couple of years where you've said that. And then he'll come and do his thing, and the next thing you know, he's buried on the bench. You know? But,
yeah,
but it's like.
But then he'll make. Then he'll do some stupid stuff. Like, he'll just. You know, he'll take some stupid shots. He'll take some, you know, blow some dumb assignments.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's tough as a coach to have trust in that kind of, especially if it's a guy that you're trying to, you know, put it this way. They have their trust in him. They let go of T. Ross for him. So
exactly.
I mean, T. Ross.
And they find him.
Yeah.
But I think the organization has trusted him. I still don't know if Casey's fully on board with him, man. Like, I just. I don't know. I never felt like his leash was that long. You know, but I get the money, but I just feel like his leash has never been that long. You know what I mean? Like, when he makes a mistake,
yeah,
a couple mistakes, I feel like he's.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. So but like going forward, $10 million, he has to play. Not only does he have to play because he's paid that high, but if you want to trade him, you have to play him. You got to increase his value.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, you know, maybe not this year because the team's rolling and whatnot, but next year, he's going to be in the rotation 100%.
Has to be.
So you got to get him ready.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, it's money down the drain.
Yeah. Has to be. And that's the thing. Like, as you said, like, he made Ross expendable, and now Van Vliet and OG kind of made him expendable now. You know what I mean? Which is crazy.
Almost.
But listen, I'd love to keep him, man. I really like him. I love his heart, man. You know, I've been a fan of his too. But I mean, at this point, if you can flip him for a piece that help next year if he doesn't snap out of this, because I mean, I have to think the way that the guy works, I have to think that he's going to turn it around at some point.
But
my thing is he going to get a fair shot to rise back to where he was? Just because he hasn't, like I always said, just because he hasn't been one of Casey's favorite guys. At least that's how it looks anyway. I could be wrong, but at least that's how it comes off.
So. I think right now it's one of those things where when you have a deep bench like this,
I think
we're talking about this in the group. When you have a deep bench like this, you got to ride with who's playing well. So, you know, he has to step in and show and prove it. You can't, like, I'm just watching the Chicago game. He came in at the end of the last quarter. And he's chucking air balls, two air balls I've seen in 4 minutes of me watching him play. He chucked two air balls. He took four threes. It was 0 for 4. He missed inside little, you know, floaters, blown assignment on trying to steal a ball. You know, like, those are things that in garbage time, you should be the guy that's, you know, if you're going to take all those shots, you got to show and prove.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like, it's had one or two games I've seen him come in, and even the fans are now noticing, like, every time he does something good, they're cheering to get him up. So it's like, you know what? At the end of the day, you get paid, what, $10 million a year to play basketball? You got to show and prove. Playoffs around the corner, if he turns it up in playoffs, you know, I don't know if Casey's going to really shorten his bench like everyone thinks he is. I just don't think he is. I think that he's going to be the guy, unfortunately, that's going to be the odd man in or out, depending on matchups.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm looking at the stat line tonight, like against Chicago. They won 120. What was the score? 122-98. And yeah. He played 9 minutes. He only had two points. So it's like, yeah, you see it's tough. And I'm looking down the stat line. Siakam 17-6. Poeltl 10-6. Van Vliet had 11-4 assists. You know what I mean? So it's tough, man. It's tough. The team is really playing well. I mean, it's a great thing. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, winning masks all that smells, right? Like, you know, you can Febreze. Yep. Winning Febreze is everything, man. You know what I mean? Like, it just any faint smell, it gets rid of that smell. It's like a fart in the wind. It just dissolves within seconds, you know, when you're winning like this. So you don't hear him complaining too much about it because it's working. Like, how can you complain when they're having the best run in the history of their the history of their franchise? You can't be the guy complaining. You look like an asshole. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like, man, like a part of me, like, you want to see him play. But like right now, they're just, you got to ride with the winning. So, you know,
he'll
I can't.
Be fine.
Yeah, I think
he'll be fine.
Yeah,
he'll be fine. Like, I don't know, as we all said, like, you know, next year is a whole new season. You know, guys are right now, this current season, guys are on a high roll right now. These guys are all rolling. You can't mess that up.
So, and remember, he has playoff experience, right?
Played well, too. Played pretty well.
Yeah. So you never know, man. Well. You know, he'll be back.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be valued.
The one thing I want to ask you guys is seeing that the Raps at State Pat, basically at trade deadline, they got rid of just Bruno, that opened up a cap space.
Bruno!
Do you think that they'll still go after I do think the team could use a vet that has playoff experience, or maybe a little bit more three point threat to come every now and then. Like, I know that Marco's off the off the market. Joe is not really the guy I thought would fit the team. But let's just play devil's advocate and play around here. Mr. Air Canada himself gets bought out. What would you do? Would you go after Mr. Carter?
I would, only if he knows there's no guarantees of how much minutes he's gonna get. Like, meaning, like, you're coming in here. I want you to be like a player coach. You know, I want you to be that guy in the locker room. When you're on the floor, you know, you do what you do right now and just hit that open jumper. Like, just coming with no expectations as what the only one as helping this young team grow. If that was it, and from a fan standpoint and merchandise and all that stuff, that's just, you know, bonus and media and whatnot. But if he came with that expectation, knowing that, listen, I'm not guaranteeing you 15, 20 minutes a night, you just, and he was willing. Yep, I'll do it.
But isn't that what he has right now, just on a losing team?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still plays, I don't know how many minutes. How many minutes does he
like
play?
Around that, like 15 minutes. Some games he doesn't play that often, but.
Okay, if it's the same role right now, then if he plays under 15 minutes a game right now, and then if it's the same role, then yeah, I'm okay with that. I just wasn't sure how much minutes he was getting. Because honestly, I like, again, as we said, you know, alluded to earlier, I love our bench. I really don't want to ruin that.
No. I really don't. I agree. So we're ruling out. So he's averaging about 17 minutes a night on the
17 minutes. Even that may be a little too high for me, man.
Yeah. But
yeah, you're right.
But let me ask you a question. So I guess I'll answer your question with a question, Randall. So we're just ruling out the fact that we're not going to re-sign Bruno. We're not going to re-pick it back up. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Bruno.
Damn.
Nah, Bruno's done.
Damn, he's back in Brazil.
But, back in Sao Paulo. I think they're going to find someone. They might even... Is Shannon Fry bought out?
Is who?
Shannon Fry.
Not yet. He's still playing.
He's on... He went... Who did he go traded to now?
The Lakers. The Lakers.
Lakers, yeah. I was going to say Clippers. Yeah, Lakers.
I think
he's there. I don't know if he's playing, though.
I don't know how much he's playing. But, sorry, I got to go back to a second. Why is Vince Carter still playing? Let me ask you that question. Why is he still playing at this point?
He wants to play another year. Yeah, but he doesn't need money.
At this point, well, hear me out. At this point, you're going to make the Hall of Fame at this point. If the only way you're going to stick around in the league like this taking like 15, 16 minutes and not averaging like 4 points a game or whatever it is he's averaging, I'm only doing that if I'm on the cusp of winning a championship. You know what I'm saying? If I'm with the Spurs, if I'm with the Cavs, if I'm with Boston, like if I'm trying to get a title, he's never won a title. He's never made a conference final. So at this point, that's the only way I'm still sticking around. Like he's 41 years old.
Hold on. Did he make a conference final with the Nets?
Oh, with Orlando. 1 year he made it with Orlando, I think. And he didn't do anything in that period of time. But my thing is, listen, man, like the guy's had a Hall of Fame career at this point. I'm looking at his points. He's averaging 5 points a game. Like, why is he still sticking around and playing with the Kings? Like, it's not like he's trying to like chase a ring. Like, even to come to Toronto, yeah. Like you're coming back to the city you put on a map to basically ride the bench and be in street clothes to be a player coach. Like, and, I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I don't understand that with him.
I think I'm a Toronto fan. Everybody knows from the day one this franchise was here in Toronto, and when the way he left, I still don't like it. A little bit of me still angers me how, you know, we're so willing to take him back. A little teeny bit. Obviously, I don't mind. You know, I would rather him back than not having him right now. But it's still, like, I still haven't forgotten.
A little bit of me
is like, because he has kind of went to the media and said, you know, I might come back to Toronto. He like, Vince Carter said that.
Right.
And now, as you bring this up, talking about, like, why is he still playing? Like, he sees Toronto as at least a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs. And maybe he sees a chance to actually not get a ring, but prolong his career. Like, I don't know, like for selfish reasons.
Yeah, so, maybe. But I'm
a little bit of me.
Remember, Julian, they did offer him something in preseason.
Yeah.
They offered him a contract. Yeah. He refused it. And, you know, he keeps alluding to more of a one of those one-day contracts. Where he comes,
he said it to me. The way he said it, the last time he was in Toronto, he said, "You know, I never know." Because then he said, "I'm looking to play for another year." So it's pretty much selling himself, you know, keeping his opportunities
options open.
Yeah, and to Vince still playing. My other point, you know, is he married with any kids or anything like that?
I believe he is married.
I don't think he's married.
I believe he is married.
I'm just trying to think, like, what else he could be doing.
Anything else at this point, man? Commentate. Go train kids. Go spend your money.
In Orlando, to move across to California to the other side of the country, I'm assuming that's like further away from where your kids and your wife. But he's not there.
Right, but again, to play for the Kings, like it's not like you're playing for Golden State and you're trying to get a ring. Like at least that I'd understand. But at this point, I'm just like I don't understand the point of this. The love of the game is funny. 10, 12, 13, 14 years ago, we were questioning this guy's love for the game. And now this guy's sticking around too long because of the love of the game. Like At the same time,
too, we can't knock the guy from making money.
I hear you. You want to retire when you want to retire, right?
So you don't want to. Making money, playing the game, man. Playing the game.
And I give him respect because he's still putting down dunks. I'll give him respect for that.
He's
a freak athlete, definitely. Man. To me personally, like if I was him, and I'm not ripping him to like rip him to shreds, and I know we're talking about, like, listen, my very first podcast was on Vince Carter and impact on the city of Toronto. You know, I still have me and yourself, and as much as a lot of people are still somewhat bitter about how things ended off with him. You know what I mean? But like, yeah, it would be a nice story to see him close off his chapter. But I'm just like, at this point, I'm like, I don't understand why he's still playing. But that's just me. I figure if you're gonna go for a buyout guy, you want to do it for a guy that I want him to help on the floor too when he gets on there. Is Vince gonna do that in a series against Cleveland? You know, 7 games. I don't know. You know what I mean? But that's just me. I don't know who's on the buyout. We're not fact checking here, so I don't know who's on the buyout list right now. Potentially that could still be bought out before March 1st, but I don't know. Like I said, I'm thinking we can get somebody a little younger. That's just me.
Usually the older guys.
That's just me. Here's my final question. So with all the moves that happened at the trade deadline pertaining to Cleveland, who seem to have revitalized adding Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., Rodney Hood, and George Hill, how far do you see the Raptors going? Eastern Conference Finals? Dare I say finals? And I guess it's a two-part question. And is it considered a failure if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals?
Well, for me, I said that already. Mm-hmm. I said it would be a failure if, in my eyes. not saying in the, you know, in the analyst's eyes or, you know, or experts, in my eyes, it'd be a failure. Because
I had
they've been playing so well.
Yeah, I had them. I had them like pegged to go to the conference finals, and this is when Gordon Hayward, before Gordon Hayward went down. So I did think they would make it to the conference finals. I think they. I still thought that Boston has the team to the future team of the East. I thought they were. It was going to be, you know, them and Toronto and them kind of fighting for that supremacy of top three, you know, like with Cavs. Not to say I was expecting to finish first in the East. I thought it would be a dog fight between the three of them, right? Similar to what it is now, I thought that I did expect the wild card to be the Bucks, but I do think that, you know, that they have the team to go to the conference finals. I do think they even have the team this year to go to the finals. Even though Cleveland has made some great moves, I still don't know if that's going to be enough for them to gel for playoff time. It's one thing to come and kind of run all over teams and play a wild style of basketball because they're getting to know each other for regular season. But when you get down to X's and O's, are they going to be able to play against the Raptors in their cohesiveness? I don't know.
Yeah, and it's funny because when Boston was playing Cleveland, I remember people were like, oh, man, look at Cleveland. They're back. And I'm like, man, listen, like there's no tape on how these players are going to play with LeBron. Like, how are you scouting these guys yet? There's not enough tape.
Yeah.
Like, there was no tape actually when they played Boston. Like, how do you scout against them? So if they have a good game, it's like, how do you expect it? You don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yo, the next time Boston plays Cleveland, I bet you it's a completely different game because now they got some tape not only on how they played them, but how they played other teams. So I agree with you. I think this is a great shot. This is probably the best shot Toronto's ever had in the last few years since this We the North era started to make the finals. Like, no Hayward in Boston. Like, we didn't expect that to happen. You know, we expect by now Boston being a juggernaut with Hayward, and they're still really good. But, you know, like, losing a guy that can potentially average, like, 25-5 for you, you know, losing him 5 minutes into your season, you know, like, that could come back and get them. There's constant flux in Cleveland. You know, Washington stumbling. Milwaukee is a threat, but they're still not totally ready yet, although they've been playing better since Jason Kidd's gone. And I'm looking at the Raptors bench. They have some sort of playoff experience from last year, at least under their belt. So they shouldn't be completely freaked out by the moment because some of them were playing last year. Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is probably the best time, you know, for them to make the finals. Like, Philly's not ready yet. This is the time, man. Like, they got the right set of energy. They got the perfect chemistry. They got the deep bench to, if need to, win the playoffs to go far. They play with high energy, you know, both on both offense and on the defensive side of the floor. They're really efficient. This is the best time, man. Like, this is the best time. With that said, I guess to answer my own question, you're gonna laugh when I say this. I think it's a successful season if they lose to, like, the Boston or Cleveland in game 7 of the second round. I'm actually okay with it, only in the sense that the expectation that we had on the Raptors at the beginning of the season, you just wanted them to be a playoff contender, and that was all. You know what I mean? And let the young guys build. So I think we're ahead of schedule. So I think this year, if they end up getting bumped out in a tough 7-game series in the second round, yeah, you want to see them make the finals. You want to see them make the conference finals. But, like, that's the minimum that they have to hit. They have to at least go to game 7 in the second round.
I'm telling you right now, if they do not make the conference finals, that is going to be a huge black mark on Larry and DeRozan. It will hurt their careers because the whole thing that everybody's saying, even my boys in the U.S., because they don't get the feeds, the Raptor feeds at all, really. So they don't know much about them. That's why none of these players on the second unit went to the Rising Star, just that no one's seen them play and no one really follows the Raptors.
Right.
So the one thing is that, you know, everybody's just saying, yeah, Raptors are good. You know, they're good regular season team. Even Joel used to tell me he was playing. He's like, yeah, Raptors are really good. But no one fears them. Right?
Say Joel Anthony, by the way.
Yeah,
nobody fears them, right? So they need to get that push. They really want to make that next step. Now, do I expect them to go to the NBA Finals? No. Mm-hmm. But I do expect them to go to conference finals and to play a good more than 5-game series. You know, they have to. You have that. This is the legacy. This is what MU did. MU put this team together to make a deep playoff push. I mean, everybody knows it's the Golden State era, and no one's going to dethrone them. But it's, you know, if they really want to make a mark and make that push to the next level of respect in the NBA, they need to go to the conference finals. If they don't do that, I'm telling you guys right now, it's all for nothing.
I agree.
That's why I put my money down. That's why I put my money down against Kevin. Is because MU's not stupid. MU's not going to re-up on DeRozan and Larry just to go to a second round conference finals. No, they're not going to re-up just to come fourth or fifth in the East. No. We all know that these guys are go out there to win, and they're going to be in the first three, or they got to go to big. I'm telling you, when playoff comes, we better see, you know, DeMar hitting threes, or it don't matter what happens. Them guys are just going to go down as just like the Bills, just like, you know, good regular season team, and that's what they are.
But every year, wide right.
I was going to say, unless they play Cleveland in the second round, you know, it's all about, you know, depends on who they match up with.
Yeah.
Then obviously I'm going to be okay with them. Well, I'll never be okay with them losing, but if they're going to be outed in the second round to Cleveland, all right. Because right now, I'm assuming Cleveland is going to win games and they're going to finish top three. I'm assuming right now. I think right now they're like, what? Are they third right now?
They are third.
They're still third. Okay, so then they're going to remain top three. You know how sometimes, like, I don't know where Toronto Boston is going to end up, and they can face Cleveland in the second round. You know, so it just all depends on who they play. But, yeah, if they can't lose to any other team, Boston, Washington, Miami, none of those teams, man. Milwaukee, now if they lose to Milwaukee, I'll be upset, and they shouldn't lose. But at the same time, I wouldn't be, like, you know, as upset if it was, like, a team like Boston or somebody. I'll be more upset if we lost to Boston than if we lost to Milwaukee. And Boston lost again tonight, by the way, to the Clippers. Yeah. And Jordan with 30 points, just to let you guys know. DeAndre Jordan. And hitting his free throws down the line. I'm telling you, if he was on the team in the playoffs against LeBron, I would have been on cloud nine. I'm telling you, cloud nine.
Yeah, but that would have almost virtually that would have been almost virtually impossible to pull off. Anyway, you needed a 13 to even entertain that.
No. That was I'm talking about, like.
Hold on, guys. Sorry. DeAndre Jordan went 8-for-9 from the free throw line.
Yo, you should have seen. I'm watching it as we talk right now. And he's, like, dancing on the way back to the bench, talking to the crowd, holding up gun signs. Career highs. I think it's career highs all across the board. Not all across the board, but
wow.
From what I can see.
I don't even know what to say right now.
It's only a one game.
I know, but wow.
But defensively, I didn't see how many rebounds or blocks, so I got to look that up, too. But, again, that's where I stood on that whole DeAndre Jordan thing.
No blocks, by the way.
No blocks,
by the way.
Wow. That's shocking. But Boston, you can't. If you're Boston, I don't care. You can't lose to the Clippers on the road with no Griffin or Paul and be, like, the number one team in the East. Like, you know, I don't know. I think how they're playing now is who they really are. That's just, I know they're in a slump, but I think this is
Benham,
who they really are.
What you call it? Marco Bellinelli, he went off today. Huh?
He looked pretty good. And he was getting minutes, too. I was like, whoa. He looked good, yeah. I know you liked him, but, yeah, he looked good.
So final answer. So conference finals for...
Oh, conference finals. Yeah, for sure. I don't think I answered, but conference finals for sure. And Cleveland, I don't know. I like the players that they brought in. And it's too early for me to tell
how they're going
to
gel.
How they're going to play.
Yeah.
I think that was the other part of your question. I don't know. It's really early. But I do like how they got younger and more athletic. They look
say two games. They beat OKC and Boston. Right? Yeah, so two decent quality teams, right?
And two good teams, especially Boston. Yeah. Come on now, Julian.
Stop. Well, man, Boston is no... I'm telling you, you're going to come back to this tape at the end of the season. You're going to be like, Jules, like, you knew what you were talking about. they're not good. They're slumping now, but they're not good. Well, they're not good.
I'm not going to do that because I'm too ignorant to admit that I'm wrong in that case. but I don't know. I feel like teams like Boston. I heard Michael Wilbon say this. Like, there's teams that are like waiting for this All-Star game to kick in. This All-Star break to kick in, I should say. And you know, I'm wondering. Like, I want to see how those guys come back in the second half. I feel like they're going to come back a little bit better. You know, they got a lot of young guys
too. What do you mean,
a
bit better? Boston? They're playing in the East. They're already playing well.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like the slump is gonna bust that like after the All-Star break.
All right, let's see.
It's
recorded. It's recorded. We got this recorded.
Hey, if I'm not afraid to be wrong. That's okay. That's you know, it's you can't be right all the time. You know, but like I said, I think like that's going to be an interesting race between them, the Raptors, and even Cleveland. I expect Cleveland to kind of get a little better too before the season ends. But yeah, like I said, I think I would expect them to make the conference finals too. But I'm not going to be mad if they, like I said, they lose in like a 7-game series and it's a tough, drawn out 7-game series. I might be like, that's tough. But you know what? We're actually still ahead of expectations. So it's okay. But like I said, it's tough.
I hear, but I like how the team is playing.
Yeah, but like I said, at the end of the day, this is the best shot they've ever had to make the finals. I really believe that. If they can realize that, man, that'll be a beautiful thing. And if that happens, I think, well, two things. One, they won't win but at least they match up well with Golden State the last few years. And mm-hmm. Number two, we may as well celebrate on Yonge Street like they won the finals if they make the finals. Like when the Blue Jays won in 93 and everybody was rushing down Yonge Street. They, you know, not acting like how the Canadiens fan acted when they ran down St. Catherine Street and tore down St. Catherine Street and ran up on Sports Fever. But you know, it's at the end of the day, like if they make the finals, we gotta go down Yonge Street with bottles in our hands and just celebrate, champagne bats and all that, because they're not winning the title. They're not beating Golden State. That would be our finals.
No, they're not. They're not beating Golden State. They're not beating Houston if they meet Houston.
They're not beating San Antonio Spurs.
No, they're not. They will take. They probably have a best chance against, if Leonard ain't playing, they have the best chance against San Antonio by far.
And Houston, I would say too.
What's that? Yeah, and Houston. Yeah, and then Houston's two, and Golden State would be the third best chance. I think they would take a game or two off all three teams, though. At least one or two games.
I don't think Houston's going to win, but like if they did, I think they have their best chance. Because at the end of the day, Harden's, I mean, he's the MVP of the league in my eyes right now. And Chris Paul's been playing great for them since he's been healthy, but neither of them has proven to be great playoff players. So they got to kind of prove that to me, too. Yep. But with that said, last thoughts for you guys. Randall, start with you. Any last thoughts on the Raptors' season so far?
No, you know what? This is the golden era of Toronto basketball, man. I'm basking in the glory, man.
Enjoy it.
I'm enjoying it while it lasts, you know. So I think right now, if the basketball gods are aligned and the stars and everything is going in the right direction, I think they could go to the finals this year. And that's exciting for me. So it's going to be an interesting second half of the season. And hopefully they can pick up, some insurance piece to help them go through.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I'm just enjoying it, man, because as I said, I've been here for many years, you know, as a fan through the high and low times. And this is definitely the best team we have, you know, on the floor and on paper. So, yeah, I just hope that it continues in the second half and it goes into the next season in terms of the players developing and, you know, and hopefully making this franchise kind of getting that respect, not really from, like, that media standpoint, but respect from the league that maybe one day players, probably not, but players might look at Toronto as a team that they may want to go to, at least to end their careers and whatnot, to get that ring, kind of. You know, I don't foresee Toronto ever being a place where UFAs ever don't want to come to. But at least if we get to that finals, I think it could change the brand of the organization.
Of Weedon
North.
So
hopefully they can continue that and develop in the second half, and the young guys continue to play as well as they are and go from there.
Yeah, I think.
Bosch.
What about Chris Bosch?
No more blood clots. He's coming back to Toronto.
No, man. I don't want, like, guys like Bosch and Carter.
And Carter. They're coming back.
I'm probably one of the few Raptor fans that I don't really.
Damon Stoudemire is coming back too. Reggie Slater is coming back.
Yeah.
Keon Clark is making a comeback.
I don't mind Damon. But these other, I'm one of the few fans that I don't give a crap about Bosch or Vince Carter. Don't care, man. Like, obviously they did a lot, but right now, like today, 2018, I don't care.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, if they do make the finals, like I said again, we got to meet up on Yonge Street, Yonge and College, champagne, popping champagne. Not the good stuff. Not the good stuff. We're not cracking like Angostura and Mount Gay and that stuff. Just the cheap
baby
stuff.
Duck.
Yeah, baby duck. Whatever we can get from Max. That's how we rolling.
For sure.
On that note, fellas, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your thoughts on the Raptors' first half of the season. Very much appreciated, for sure. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Oh.
Yeah, man, you know me. I can talk Raptor ball any day of the week.
Yes, sir. And Julian, get that Ebola virus off your chest, man. Whatever it is you got. Don't pass it here.
Norwalk. Don't. If anybody has ever had it, you know what I'm going through. So, yeah, man, it's the worst. You're literally doing both ends. You vomit at the same time. I'm telling you, it's the worst.
Way too graphic.
On that note, no.
Yeah, let's get the hell out of here right now. Thank you all for tuning in to the AF Podcast. As always, I'm grateful for you lending me your ears and for tuning in. A special shout out goes out to Randall Walter and Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, for coming on the AV and sharing their thoughts on the Raps' first half of the season, or two-thirds of the season, I should say, at this point. This has been the best first half of the season so far, and they've never been into the All-Star break in first place, so it's been a revelation so far. The season starts back this Friday versus Milwaukee with their new coach and Jabari Parker back. So I'll be tuned in for sure. They face the Cavaliers and the Celtics two more times each before the regular season is over. Those will be the most important games for the rest of this season. And if they can grab three out of four of those games, I really believe that they'll take the number one spot in the Eastern Conference as long as they continue to play the way that they've been playing. So let's see what happens with the rest of the regular season. But one thing's for sure, the city of Toronto will definitely be watching. In the meantime, you can catch all of the South Shore Ave shows wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. Make sure you subscribe to that. And to subscribe to the Foundation website and to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. Make sure you check out the next episode where we'll be discussing Black Panther and the impact it's having on the culture. So make sure you tune into that. Come back for that one, all right? Don't play around. For Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, and Randall Walter, this is Cal C, and you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace. We out.